Hello and welcome to the hearing. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I am Scotto.
And before we get to this week's album, just want to mention a few things. Lava LaRue, who we reviewed earlier this year, has a new single out, High Fidelity. Great song. Very sort of, neo-70s, kind of a Silk Sonic vibe. Also, Boa, who we reviewed last year, are back together.
Yeah, that was just last year. I thought we had reviewed them like years ago.
No, it was last year because I was stuck in bed at the time, so I know it was.
Oh, right. It was like the beginning, right? It was the Page family.
Not Page. Yeah, Rogers.
Rogers family.
The Rogers family thing, yeah. So, yeah, it was like very shortly after I got stuck in bed. I think it might have been the same, around the time we did Cats.
Oh, God.
But yeah, they're back together. They reformed in 2018 on the 20th anniversary of Lane to do a show online, and I guess they just started playing together again, and they officially announced it on Jasmine's Instagram recently, released a remix of Duvet. Sounds nothing like the original. Very cool.
So it's a cover?
Well, no, it's a remix.
I got you again with it.
A remix artist... whose name escapes me, took it in a very different direction from the original. There's some guitar and the vocal from the original. That's about it. Very interesting. And I'm not usually a remix fan, but I liked it. Also, I have a playlist on YouTube for the album I'm recording. I currently have 3 songs done. I'll be adding as I record things. Link will be in the show notes. It's just vocal and ukulele. Very lo-fi. I'm leaving in mistakes. I'm pretty much taking the guided by voices approach.
All right.
So I miss a few notes here and there. There's one song, you can hear my nail hit the uke, but I'm very proud of the songs, and the uke playing overall is very solid. My voice, it's okay. On to this week's album, which is from 1992, Copper Blue by Sugar, continuing our Bob Mould trilogy. Sugar was an American alternative rock band formed in 1992 and led by singer-songwriter and guitarist Bob Mould. The band was named in an Athens, Georgia Waffle House restaurant when Mould spotted a sugar packet on the table where he and the other two band members were sitting. Having played in a handful of bands and spent a lot of time in diners, I love that story. I can totally see doing that.
Of course. You have a lot of time to kill in those diners.
I'm surprised it took until 92 to name a band Sugar.
Yeah.
Like there hadn't already been a Sugar before that band.
That's really strange.
Copper Blue is the band's debut studio album. The popularity of Nevermind and the ensuing grunge wave had a profound impact on Mould. In an interview with NPR, he said, "When Nevermind came out, that album changed the way people listened to music. A lot of the songs that I had been writing in 91 led up to my next group, Sugar, and had it not been for Nevermind, I don't know if Sugar's Copper Blue would have stood a chance in 92, but people were now receptive to that sound." So... it's interesting. We talked last week about how Skidoo was a huge influence on Nirvana, and now Nirvana is kind of setting the stage for Mould's next project.
Right. It's an interesting cycle. That and like the Pixies, these guys, I think they toured together in the late 80s with Skidoo and the Pixies.
Yeah.
So, and of course you hear all of that in here.
Yeah. And I'm going to say, given that he recorded it before all of that, or particularly wrote it before all of that, the man was prophetic.
Well, I mean, the Husker Du stuff sounded like Nirvana, too. That was even...
Well, not just Husker, but we'll get to it. Copper Blue was released on September 4th, 92, by Recodisc and Creation Records, produced by Bob Mould and Lou Giordano, and features Bob Mould on guitar, vocals, keyboards, and percussion. David Barb on bass and Malcolm Travis on drums and percussion. Reminder, I don't edit any songs into our reviews for copyright reasons, but on our blog at John Scotto, you'll find links to Copper Blue on Spotify and YouTube, so you can listen along if you'd like. Track one, The Act We Act. That took my brain a minute. That kind of got to my dyslexia. A nice kind of metally opening riff, a good groove. Throughout the album, I think the drums are just mixed too low.
Yeah, there's a very sameness to a lot of songs here, but I think When I first opened this up in Spotify and saw the 2 hour running time, I almost
What
fainted.
track did you stop on, by the way?
I guess that's something we recorded. I stopped at 10.
Okay, good. Me too.
Because that's, you know, that's
the original album. Okay.
The original album.
I saw that you listened to the deluxe version, and the last song you listened to was track 9, so I was concerned.
No, Spotify, if you don't listen to the complete song, it doesn't put it on. If you, like, stop.
Really? Okay.
Like, the sound effects at the very end of Man on the Moon?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't listen to all of those sound effects again through the whole thing last time, so it didn't put it on there for me.
Okay. Back to the act we act. It's kind of, I want to say typical grunge, but apparently he wrote it before Nirvana.
It is typical grunge, but he, you know.
It's pretty grunge.
He's been doing typical grunge now for many years at this point? So.
I think the doubled vocal doesn't really cut through enough. And this is the thing with Bob. I don't know if I mentioned this last week. His vocals are notoriously mixed low.
Yeah.
And he also has a baritone voice that is right in the range of a distorted electric guitar.
Right.
You know, when you have in music with, you know, a lot of distorted electric guitars, you tend to get very high vocalists.
Because okay.
A higher voice will cut through that.
Right.
Bob's got a lower voice. He's right in my register. So he doesn't really cut through. You double that and it cuts through even less.
But listening to this, and there was only like a couple songs that I remembered from this album from the 90s, which, I mean, this 92 was like such a big year, you know, for music for me at least. You know, it was kind of when I started DJing and stuff, and it was just everything just opened up. So like this album coming out was pretty big. And, I, you know, remember it being a lot of the same, you know? So I'm hearing this and it's good and everything, but I'm like, am I going to be in for this for like the next 9 songs kind of thing?
And well, it changes about midway through though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was very welcome for me, but, for the beginning of this album, I have a lot of the same issues I had with Husker Du.
Yeah?
It's a wall of sound that just has too much reverb on it.
That is kind of mold, though, I think. I don't think you're going to get around that.
In his solo stuff, there's a much more separation. And I think he started in that direction with this. I do think it has got a good solo, nice bass tone. This album kind of had me wishing that I do Your Thing. I listened to it multiple times.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm glad I got to do that for this one, because there's some weeks where things are just nuts and I don't get it. But this time I got to do the proper three-time hearing.
Because this beginning, these first few tracks, I was concerned. Because, like I said, big fan of Bob's solo stuff. And the first half of this album had me kind of questioning. But then it gets into the second half and, you know, he restored my faith.
This song, I didn't really care for the first time I heard it. But by the third time, I was on board.
Okay.
Definitely.
On to track 2, A Good Idea. I didn't know this one by the title, but the minute I heard it, I realized I heard this one a lot back in the day, possibly at our college radio station.
6-3, you played it.
We played it a lot, okay.
We did.
Like the bass tone, it's very Better Than Ezra, very reminiscent of Good. But
I was going to say, isn't this like a few years before Better Than Ezra?
1 year before Good was released.
Yeah.
So they were ripping off Bob.
And again, the first time I was like, and you know what? I didn't really remember this song. Oh, I mean, yeah, I guess I kind of did. And but, you know, the more I listened to this one, the more I was almost close to putting this as one of the strongest on the album, but.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. It's not my pick 4 favorite, but it's up there.
Yeah, same here.
I like the spoken vocal. Much more separation between instruments on this one. That's why when I say I don't like a wall of sound, I like to hear each instrument distinctly and figure out what they're all doing. I also don't... It's an issue with my hearing. High frequencies bother me. So if there's a lot of high frequencies on like cymbals and distorted guitar, it gets to me. So, but this is a much cleaner guitar sound, much better separation. You can really hear the bass. I liked the guitar sound effects in verse two. He just kind of makes noise along with the vocal.
Yeah, and it just gets so manic towards the end, you know, where it's just like, I mean, yeah, he's repeating the same thing over and over again. But it the point isn't the vocal. The vocal is just an instrument.
It's the build.
Guitar that's just going crazier and crazier. Yeah. And
he does what that is another happening
here? Is someone drowning someone? Is that what's happening here?
There's a little something about the water. Yeah, I was never
right.
Really
hands
clear on
my head and push, like when we're in the water. Like I didn't look at the lyric copy, but just getting from the listening, it was like something's going on here, man.
The other song that this reminds me of, which I think also was after this, is Possum Kingdom.
Right. Yes. I was definitely thinking of that, and it there's a few
by the Toadies,
right? There's a few songs that I in alternative pop of the mid '90s that totally took from this.
Yeah, I do think the vocal was a little too low in the pre-chorus and the chorus. It's an issue with Bob. You know, his vocals are never the thing that's front and center.
It's why you can't also figure out the lyrics entirely, because they're down low.
Yeah.
But one thing that's great about this song compared to some of the other ones on the album is that this is tighter. Yes, it's repetitive, but he doesn't go like the whole 5 minute plus thing like the other ones. He's just 3.5.
Yeah.
You get this crazy build at the end and it's done.
Right. Track three, Changes, like the chaotic opening riff. Nice verse melody. Love how present the bass is on this one. Like, it's not completely front and center, like, good idea, but it's still nicely present. It's got a nice bouncy groove. The bridge was a nice change of pace. Less of a wall of sound. Still too much ringing treble for me, though. Ending gets too repetitive, and the ending sound effects kind of annoyed me.
It's a, like, a 60s pop vibe, but, you know, so I wrote my notes. Punk songs should be short. This could be the poster child for that statement.
Yeah. On to track three, Helpless. This was the single.
Yes.
Love the opening riff. Nice verse melody. Nice groove. It gets too repetitive for me. It needs a bridge.
Yeah, this is, again, like early 60s pop, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with a bit more of heaviness to it.
Yeah.
The Foo Fighters totally ripped this sound off.
Yeah.
Years later.
I was thinking about the album we're doing next week, a solo album, Silver Age.
Yeah.
There's one or two songs that are very Foo Fighters, and then I realized, because I'm not a Foo Fighters fan, I've talked about that before, and I'll talk about it more next week. But they totally ripped him off.
Yes. Oh my God, yes. Like, even more than Nirvana took from him. I think the Foo Fighters took way more. But, you know, this should have been bigger, I think. Hmm. This was definitely... I think this was better than like Soul Asylum or Screaming Trees, you know, stuff for that was pretty big in that era that nobody remembered anything from them after that.
Well, because that stuff was what was being sold because of Seattle. Bob was thought of as being from Minnesota, though he was originally from New York. But anyway, he was like Midwestern guy, and he was kind of a heavy set balding guy. He didn't fit the image.
Like, so Billy Corgan had an interesting story about the Screaming Trees and how because they something with the record label and the single soundtrack, that was how they got to be the single from the album.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Corgan, of course, thought his song should have been the single from it.
Right.
But, you know, they did what they were going to do with the record label to promote their own.
Right.
And then nobody heard from them again.
I think Bob had already been outed by this point, too.
Oh, really?
He was outed in Spin.
Oh.
And then he was like, yeah, okay.
That's tough.
He was outed by Spin. I think it was by this point. And I think that's also why he didn't get much of a push.
Yeah, you know, you're right. There were some people that kind of were just like, oh, I don't know, there was something I didn't like about them. I was like, what do you mean, man? It's like, you know.
Yeah. I think it was like right after Husker, that like around Workbook morning when he was outed by Spin.
Of course, I'm always the last to know, so, you know.
On to track five, Hoover Dam. This one's my favorite. The beginning sound effects were a nice surprise. Great groove. Great change of pace because it's not just noise.
Yeah, I can't say if I love it or hate it. It's there's so much going on here, though. It's, I mean, it, full on Beatles.
It reminds me of Spock's.
In a way,
they do predate Spock's. Does well, no, Spock's kind of predates this. They're slightly, I guess.
The light was
90, I think.
This is very similar to Tomorrow Never Knows.
Oh, it's chamber pop.
A tribute to, you know.
Yeah, it is definitely chamber pop. Great drum sound. I like the synth solo, the backwards guitar solo.
I can't imagine anything more out of fashion in 1992 than a keyboard solo.
Yeah. Kind of love that about it.
It is. I mean, it's very, I think of Squeeze, like mm-hmm. the melody is a lot like Tempted.
Yeah. I actually like Tempted.
And a lot of the keyboard, of course, I mean, mm-hmm. there's nothing not to like about Tempted. It's, you know, a great mm-hmm. blue-eyed soul song.
A lot of people hate that song because it
really?
Was very overplayed. And
well, yeah, I mean, things get overplayed, but that's what happens with music, though.
And it was a Paul Carrick Squeeze song, and you know, he's kind of looked down on because that's what you hear from me.
It is always really funny that Paul Carrick wound up singing mm-hmm. the vocals of the biggest song of the band, you know? Yeah. But, you know, Elvis Costello is right.
Yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't have been as big a hit if he wasn't singing those vocals.
Okay, you do know that. I was gonna mention that. That really low vocal in the second verse was Elvis Costello.
Oh, yeah?
You were referring to Paul Carrick. The bass vocal in the second verse is Elvis Costello.
I did not know that. I just assumed it was one of the other guys from Squeeze.
No,
because you know, they're all singers.
Yeah, in the video it's the bass player, but in the studio it was. Okay. I think Elvis produced it.
He produced it, and they did not want the studio keyboard player background singer singing the vocals on this song.
Right.
But Elvis Costello was like, listen to this guy, you know.
Especially when the lead guitarist writes everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who was the lead singer? Back to Hoover Dam. Love the chaotic synth at the end.
Tears for Fears would be the other one, of course.
Chamber Pop.
A couple years after Seeds of Love.
Yeah. Seeds of Love is exactly Chamber Pop. They just took the diagram.
And just the whole George Harrison tribute in the guitar playing throughout most of this.
It's just such. It was such a nice change of pace after all the noise.
Another influence, of course, XTC.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, XTC, love XTC, but they took it all from the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know?
So I'm not sure. After three listens, I'm like, is this good or not?
You kind of got to love a song like that that you can't decide if it's good or bad, though.
Yeah, I'll probably give it another shot still.
Track 6, The Slim. This has a nice triplet groove. Love the mix of acoustic and electric. Nice verse melody. The synths in the chorus and the echoey vocal were a nice combination. The second half of this album seems like a bit of a shift in Bob's writing.
Yeah.
You know, he's going in a bit of a different direction. It kind of mirrors his later stuff. Whereas the first few songs were very much grunge of the time.
They could have been Husker songs,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This is like, I mean, I like this one. It's got a little of everything. Mm-hmm. It's almost, it's loud as usual, of course, but it's very waltz-like.
Yeah, it's a great triple groove. I love the twangy guitar and the break and how it just builds to this angry chaos. Like, it's repetitive as hell, but it doesn't get annoying because it just gets angrier and angrier.
Right. And a waltz, you're expecting it to be repetitive because that's the point of a waltz.
True.
They can't have very red wild variations mm-hmm. in a waltz.
Right. On to track 7, If I Can't Change Your Mind. This is basically jangle pop, but I like it.
I'm going with this one for my weakest, I think.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, this was 2 years before the Friends theme.
Okay.
I was kind of half expecting you to reference the Friends theme, but...
You know, I hadn't thought of the Friends theme. I try not to.
Kind of have that vibe to it. But it's got a nice acoustic sound, good bouncy groove, good bass tone. I like the harmonies in the second verse in the bridge. I like the Rickenbacker 12-string solo.
Because, you know, my notes, who I have of this. This mm-hmm. is very Phil Collins or We Can't Dance era Genesis.
Really? Interesting. It's not where I would
So
have gone.
you bring up a Rickenbacker, of course.
Well,
But I think of
I would.
Mike Rutherford.
Okay, my thought is McGuinn, Roger McGuinn, the Birds, or Tom Petty for that.
But yeah, it's straight up 60s pop
Yeah.
kind of. It's got this tight drum beat though, which of course is pretty much the Phil Collins sound. And it's a little bit of Celtic influence here again, too.
On to track 8, Fortune Teller. At this point, I was ready to get back to the noise.
Yes,
Had
it
enough
is
of a break
very
from it.
welcomed back.
But it still sounds like more modern Bob, more of his more recent songwriting. Great groove, like the verse melody, great bass tone. Like the palm muting in the chorus, it's not something he does very often. Palm muting is you take the edge of your hand and put it against the strings right at the bridge to give it a tighter sound.
Okay.
It's not really a thing done in a lot of punk, because punk, you have those loud ringing guitars.
Right.
So that was a nice change. Love the sort of really hard hitting guitar in verse 2. The chorus out gets a little repetitive, but I do like the bend that he does on the word teller.
It's really, what he does. He finds some phrase, or in this case, the title of the song, and he just runs with it. Usually I've found that annoying, but this one I really like.
Well, because when Bob does it, he doesn't just repeat. He goes insane with it.
Yeah.
He kind of revels in that repetition and builds it. Even on some of the Husker stuff on the last week that I was complaining about, it was repetitive, but even when it repeated, it got bigger
Yeah.
and weirder. On to track 9, Slick. This is my pick for the weakest by far.
Really?
This is my showgirls for music.
Really?
I never want to hear this song again. I thought the transition in the beginning with the sound effects was nice, but this is just like typical 90s pseudo hippie stuff.
I like this one. In fact, I'm going with this one for my strongest,
Oh
actually.
shit. Wow.
It feels like a fully developed song, which is kind of the first time, only one on the album really that has that feel to it.
The harmonies just don't work for me. They just make it harder to understand. I was bored halfway through.
I like the echo effect, the slowed down guitar. It's so different from everything else, and he's going for more of a haunting than a hard rock, which is, I think.
I just thought of, what was it, Three Strange Days? I can't think of the band offhand. But there were a lot of these kind of
Is it School of
pseudo-psychedelic.
Fish or something like that?
Yeah, School of Fish, that was it.
Okay.
There was a lot of that sort of pseudo-psychedelic stuff going on in the 90s.
Oh, and it's been running through this whole album, though.
This one, it kind of smacked me in the face and irritated me. And finally, Man on the Moon. Starts and stops at the beginning are nice, like the verse melody, like the intensity of the guitar, and the swirling vocals in the chorus. The synth and guitar part right before the second verse really caught me off guard.
Right. I can't get past that he did a power ballad.
Yeah, there's a nice chamber pop break after the second chorus.
Yeah.
He always does, even on his really heavy stuff, there's always one mellow song.
Yeah, but this is like your textbook power ballad, and I don't think I had heard him do that before until this.
The nice there's a nice quiet keyboard part at the end that really it just kind of sneaks up on you.
Yeah.
So do you recommend it?
I would. I think there's a lot here. There's only a few that, I was kind of meh about, but for the most part, I like it. What was your pick for strongest anyway? I don't think I caught that.
I'm pretty sure I mentioned it. Let me see. Oh, Hoover Dam.
Okay. Oh, all right. Okay.
I absolutely recommend it, particularly the second half. The first couple of songs, I hate track 9, but the rest of it is brilliant. This was really the moment where Bob kind of found his solo sound. And this was intended to be a solo album.
Yeah.
But the band just had really good chemistry, and so they decided to make it a band thing, even though it's, still all Bob's songwriting.
So what's strange is this one was of, I was of its time, so I should have a lot of nostalgia for this one, but I don't. Whereas Husker, it was a little bit before my time, and I didn't have much nostalgia there, but listening to it, it gave me more nostalgia for the era that it was in.
Interesting. The next one's from 2012, and fairly I don't know if it's of its time or not. You know, it's just kind of straightforward hard rock. So
yeah, I think this is as far as I went with Mold. So, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. It'll be interesting to hear.
That's it for Copper Blue. Until next time, we'll be reviewing The Silver Age by Bob Mold, continuing the trilogy. Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.